welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. I'm Craig Hewitt, and with me this week is Alex Thuma, the founder of SaaStock, which is a popular SaaS conference that's in the fall, typically, in Dublin that I've been to twice. And so Alex is on today to talk a little bit about conferences, a little about SaaS, and a little bit about coronavirus and how that is kind of affecting everything. So Alex, how's it going?
Going well as can be, Craig. But yeah, delighted to be on the podcast and to chat on the podcast. I know you've been to SaaStock a couple of times and we've not met there in person, but good to have a conversation now.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. So for folks who don't know kind of much about SaaStock, do you want to give kind of a bit of kind of bio on kind of who you guys are and what you do and kind of who you try to serve, I guess, in the SaaS conference space?
Yeah, sure. So like, SaaStock's been going for, well, this is the fifth year. During that time, we evolved from a blog and a podcast and some SaaS meetups, which I was running in 2015. So coming up with the idea of SaaStock, and the initial idea was to be, you know, the first conference in Europe for the B2B SaaS community and bringing everybody together. We ran that in September 2016, ended up having about 700 people from 34 different countries worldwide come to that event. So it actually became much more than a European event from that very first event. We had people from India, Australia, Brazil, US, and Europe as well. From that point on, we decided to, you know, really kind of focus on the events, on connecting people throughout the kind of 5 years. We ended up running five conferences in five continents, and all of these conferences, you know, helping SaaS companies get traction, grow and scale. Typically, you know, very focused on B2B SaaS, really, I would say, kind of the early to grow stage, you know, companies, founders, you know, very strong on the founder side of things, their exec teams and investors. So people come to SaaStock to learn, you know, from their peers, to learn from those a few steps ahead, to do business as you do, you know, at conferences, to have fun in Dublin, where, you know, the flagship event is, which we won't be having fun in Dublin this year, sadly. And a lot of VC deals and fundraising gets done, you know, at SaaStock, you know, at these events. So we've been, you know, 100% really focused on being an events sort of business and offering the value through our events to our community for, you know, for these 5 years, you know, until now, which we can get into later. So now we're reinventing what SaaStock is, you know, very much so, trying to bring a lot of that value online.
That's cool. Yeah, I'd love to dig into kind of how that pivot is gone for y'all, because I think a lot of other people are in your boat, and even people that listen to this podcast are kind of having to go remote. But I was wondering if you could define for us kind of how you think about, you mentioned like kind of starter or traction scale companies that typically come to SaaStock. They're not $100 million. Well, there are some $100 million a year companies, but kind of how do you bucket those kind of groups of people?
Yeah, so effectively, we obviously capture data on who's coming to SaaStock. Generally, those that benefit the most are those with real businesses with revenue. We're not, you know, I've been to many conferences like Web Summit, for instance, and have great times there. But often you'll meet people that are, you know, entrepreneurs or have an idea and they're there for inspiration, and you know, they're currently, you know, employed by somebody and they're looking, you know, to make that leap to be an entrepreneur and to run a business. Typically, whilst I welcome, you know, that sort of bucket or group of people, you know, at SaaStock, we don't really see them there. And typically we see people that have launched a business, have at least, you know, 10 employees generally, you know, as a minimum. And I would say that, you know, probably about 30% of those are looking to get to their first million in revenue. And then the sweet spot for us is really between 1 and 10 million in revenue. And so we capture the data in terms of, you know, what is the revenue of the person that's attending, the business that they're running, right? And also, you know, the size of the company. So, you know, we get to see whether they're 1 to 10 employees, you know, 10 to 25, you know, 50 and above, or, you know, 250 and so on. So as the scale gets bigger, as we get to, you know, 1,000 plus, you know, we see, you know, a much smaller number of, you know, companies represented at that stage. And really that sweet spot is at that earlier stage. And we have that data to, you know, to look at. And what we use from that as well, it really kind of shapes the conference that we are. Because in terms of the content that we deliver, again, not necessarily sort of naming names, but, you know, been to many other similar events, right, where the content is got all the unicorns on stage, right, and they're 6 billion valuation or 10 billion valuation and phenomenal stories, right, but so far removed from the audience that are there that actually what can they learn, you know, from that person that they can take to their business, you know, today or tomorrow. And so what we do at SaaStock is, we have various different stages of content where we have a traction stage where, people are, those that are speaking are, you know, those that are either at the same level that have maybe even just got their first 10 customers and sharing that journey, or just got to their first million. And it's much more applicable, much more relevant because it's not that, you know, it's not a million miles away from where the audience is. So we really kind of cater, different types of content, different experiences for those that are, you know, really kind of across the board. Even so recently, 2 years ago, we launched a startup program because really those that were, let's say, certainly 1 to 5 and 1 to 10 employees and, you know, under 250K ARR, we weren't serving very well for the first 3 years. And actually, we realized that there's a whole load of folks out there that probably need more help, you know, than those that are, the 5 million ARR range or the 10 million ARR range, right? And we've crafted sort of programs for them to deliver, you know, certainly at the in-person conferences and now taking this online.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, I look at what we talk about on this podcast and what other conferences I go to. I think it's easy to talk about that beginning stage, you know, getting those first 10 customers, because it's a lot of the same stuff. And I think this stage, kind of maybe where we're at, and maybe like where you guys were at as a conference, is like you have, you know, we have 7 employees, we definitely have product market fit, and now it's like, okay, the things we did from 3 years ago to now are not the same things we're going to do for the next 3 years. And so how do I as a founder and a CEO think about like, okay, I have to, you know, step back from my day-to-day. I have to go hire this person and not that person. I have to think about product in a different way. So I think it's challenging to create content around that. But it's super important because I think a lot of us get to this point and we sit here thinking like, what the hell am I going to do now? Because like everything I know isn't applicable, or a lot of stuff I know isn't applicable anymore. And so I really appreciated, the kind of traction and growth stuff from StatsDoc, because you do have, you know, the CEO of Calendly and Hotjar and these companies that are doing millions of dollars, but are only a couple of years old. And so they're not so far removed that like, you hear from like, you know, Jason Fried or Jason Cohen from WPEngine, and they're super smart and experienced guys. The things they say just aren't applicable to me because they did it so long ago and from a very different perspective than we're doing it today, I feel like.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the challenge, I guess, you know, say for a conference business, because typically, you know, part of the playbook for a conference is you need the Jason Frieds and the Jason Cohens to sell tickets, right? You need some big names to kind of show that conference has credibility and they draw the crowd, you know. But actually, you know, what we've learned and what we're seeing is that, as you said, people can go and listen to, you know, both of these amazing founders, right? But what you learn from them is very difficult often to apply to your own business, where you're at. And what you want to know is, you know, the companies, as you said, maybe the CEO of Calendly or, you know, CEO of Hotjar or, you know, those type of companies that are just that little bit, you know, one step ahead of you, and have done phenomenally well and are sharing how they've done that, you know, and how, like, you know, Hotjar, for instance, and, you know, one of the talks from David Darman and the CEO of Hotjar on our YouTube channel, you know, how he built a revenue engine to get them from 0 to 10 million in revenue in 2 years. Like, everybody wants to kind of know how to do that, right?
Yeah.
But to get to 100 million, like, people, yeah, you want to get to 100 million. I'd love to be 100 million. But we know that, you know, first of all, we need to get to 10. Maybe we need to get to 5. Maybe we need to get to 1 first, right? Yeah. And so this is much more interesting and applicable. So we do that. But oftentimes, you know, unless you're, you know, a fanatic about startups or SaaS, right? And we do have these type of people that come to our events. You know, maybe some people just don't know the names of the speakers that we were having, right? But then more look to the content. But we do try and cater for both. And we do try and get the big names in because it's what works, right? But we're not one or the other. We're trying to cater for everybody.
So pivoting to what's going on these days with you guys, obviously coronavirus has changed a lot of what you do and how we all live and especially going to conferences. And so I know you guys have taken SaaS Talk online and remote. I'd love to hear just kind of, state of the union, kind of where things stand there at this point. We're recording here in the middle of August.
Yeah. So I guess, very, quick sort of backstory on that, although, everybody's aware of, coronavirus and what's happening globally, this year. But, many industries have obviously been hit by coronavirus pretty badly. SaaS is actually one industry that seems to be actually booming in many ways. Not all SaaS companies are immune to coronavirus. And again, a lot, especially if you're perhaps an SMB, focused SaaS company where your product is maybe non-essential, that you may have seen, higher churn than usual. And some SaaS companies perhaps would have been, affected by, let's say, VCs not investing or pulling, funding and so on. So not totally immune, but certainly a stronger industry than the events industry, which really has been, hit very hard. And, I saw kind of in the beginning of March, we saw obviously coronavirus, the big problems in Italy, started to spread, started to come into the UK. And we saw at the beginning of March, probably about 150 events globally cancelled in 1 week. And obviously that really kind of, gets your attention, right? And initially I thought, well, look, our first conference, we have four conferences planned this year. First one in Latin America in May, one in San Francisco end of June, then Asia in Singapore in September, and then our flagship one in Dublin in October. And initially it was like, well, it's March, who knows what's happening. Maybe we'll be okay to run our first event in May, in Brazil, because it's near summertime and maybe it'll be blown over by then. But I think within a week that maybe kind of turned into actually I think we're not going to be able to do in-person events this year, do it safely, for our community, for our team. It'd be too much of a risk to kind of have that optimism that it will happen, because again, we and I made that decision then very early, beginning of March, that hey, look, I don't know what's going on, right, with coronavirus, but I just kind of feel from what I'm seeing that conferences are not coming back this year, right, and perhaps those that are thinking that they're coming back are being wildly optimistic, from what I'm seeing, and I saw a bucket of people within the industry that were and perhaps still are holding out hope that they can do, large scale in-person events at some point this year, and they haven't cancelled their events. And I'm quite surprised about that, but perhaps they're in too deep that they at the moment and they can't dig themselves out. But we made that call early, and then when we were looking at a growth year at the beginning of this year, we were looking at we were planning on 60% growth, which was quite ambitious, but that was the plan. But it was all focused and centered around these, global in-person events, these mass gatherings, which all of a sudden were banned and, kind of being talked about as the, super spreader, events. And made the decision to take that away, and then was like, okay, what are we going to do? Because we're taking away our single source of revenue, because we're not a multi-product business, certainly, at this point. So I had, over the years, we've had a number of ideas. I thought of a number of other ideas, thinking about, just kind of came to me in terms of looking at our value and how do we bring that online. Called a war room meeting. We had about 2-hour meeting with our exec team. We went through 7 ideas, and then we were like, which one can we execute the best? Fastest time to value for our customers, fastest time to revenue, for us. And we picked initially, online conferences, right? We're a conference organizer. We've never done it online. We don't know a lot about online conferences, but we think we've got the skills to kind of, transfer here and kind of make that work. So we decided on that, left all the other ideas, on the shelf. We did the pivot. We went through March with zero revenue, lost money then in the first quarter because of that. We obviously generated some revenue, January and February for our in-person events, and then made that announcement, to our existing customers and so on that we're not doing in-person. And had a lot of good understanding and support from our customers and partners, where a lot of that was rolled over into kind of next year. So actually a lot of our expenses for these cancelled events were not refunded, but rather rolled over to next year. We're not getting refunds from venues and so on.
Sorry, is it the same for attendees, or are you crediting attendees for like the next year's event?
Yeah, exactly. So we're crediting attendees. They're getting access to our online conference if you bought a ticket. And you're also getting your credit for next year as well. And so for us as a business, and that went down like very well, with a few exceptions, right? And
always.
But had we, and had many other conference, you know, businesses, had we said, okay, yes, we will refund everybody, you know, we would have gone out of business, right? And that's not what we wanted to do. And our partners were very kind of, you know, supportive of that as well. So we went with the online conference. We came up with SaaS.remote being our first online conference. We decided for it to be a global conference, which I think may, like, it kind of worked, but also may have been a bit of a mistake, because we wanted to, given that we're running a global events business, we have, you know, communities in, you know, all of these different continents. We wanted to, you know, cater for them, and also for that to be a bit of a differentiator, you know, for us to some of the other events out there. But really, you can't cross all of the time zones, and to do that, you know, we ended up having a mammoth, you know, 10-hour online event across 2 days, so 10 hours per day.
Wow!
And I think, you know, for any one attendee, that's far too long online. However, what we did and what we saw from a behavior perspective was, you know, the Europeans were there, you know, often, you know, in that afternoon. And the US, you know, folks kind of came in, you know, maybe 4 p.m., sort of 5 p.m., and, you know, were with us, you know, until the evening. And even some of the Europeans, they were doing their work during the day and then would log on at, you know, 5 p.m. And so on. But we couldn't cater for Asia and Australia. So we pivoted. We ran that first event. It generated roughly about 360K in revenue, significantly down on, you know, what our in-person events, would bring. However, the costs are so much lower, you know, the risks in running that are much lower, easier in many ways to kind of set that up. And we did, you know, get a new audience, you know, as well as some, you know, existing, you know, SaaS.doc delegates coming there. So I think the being online, it lowers the barriers for people to attend, because, like, as you said, you've been to our event in Dublin, you had to fly there, you had to leave your family, you have to leave your business for a week, you know, and there's all these costs associated. But now we're kind of, you know, all these people that could never attend a SaaS.doc event in person had that opportunity to do it, you know, from the safety of their own home, right? And so that there are many positives, but certainly what we've seen is much more than 50%, you know, lower revenue, you know, from this, even though this was our first event. But now we have three more online conferences for the rest of the year. Two regional ones, and we're replacing our flagship one with SaaS.doc EMEA online in October, and taking a lot of our learnings, you know, from the first online conference to improve this, event and experience. For instance, one example, so we did a retro, afterwards, where effectively, what worked, what didn't work, we did the round robin with that with the team, and, you know, came up with a whole list of what works and what didn't work. And one of the things we're adapting is we're not doing 2 days and 10 hours per day and trying to, you know, please everybody across the world. And in fact, we're running it across 4 days. And the first day, each day will be no more than 4 hours, you know, per day. So it's a bit more bite-sized and people commit to that. So it's one of the examples of the learnings that we have.
So you said that like revenue was down quite a bit, like half or so, or I think you mentioned of kind of the in-person events, but profitability, like on a per conference basis, like obviously your costs are, I don't know what they were, but much lower. Like, did you guys do okay in terms of like the health of the business with this move?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, revenue was, I mean, given that was our first online event, I mean, it was down certainly to our in-person, but what event do you compare that to in our portfolio? So certainly if you look at Dublin is a multi-million euro event from a revenue perspective. And then if you look at our events, our in-person events in general, certainly we'd normally be looking at, you know, 30%. You know, profit margin, on that. And with online, we were looking at 80% gross profit margin at least.
Wow.
And
that's good for you guys. That's great.
So that's what we hit, and then there's me then as a as a CEO, as a person sort of, well, not I'm not the only person running the business, but then all of a sudden seeing our profit margin jump up and seeing that this, you know, as a business model is actually more interesting to me than the huge risk that we take with the in-person events and the huge cash outflow the upfront cash outlay that we put into all of these events. So there's a lot of risk that we do. It sucks the cash out of the business, but online events, it doesn't do that, and it's super profitable, but the revenue is lower. So looking at that and thinking about that as a business model, I mean, certainly we've got the short-term decision, which could become long-term, and I kind of hope it does in many ways, in that obviously because of Corona, the next 12 months, all of our events are online, which then means that we can focus on building a much more kind of profitable, business. But we do want to come back, in October to Dublin again. It's a flagship event. So, put a lot of love into that event over the five, years. It's a great experience, and we want that to come back if we can. But it's still uncertain, if we can or not.
I think one of the big questions of anybody that goes to online conferences or that runs them is engagement and that intangible kind of like hallway track and having drinks, especially in Dublin. How have you guys tried to counter the lack of that in an online setting?
Yeah, you can in some ways and you just can't in others, right? And so I think what we learned and through the discussions, when we did the first event, and we're speaking to we use a platform called Hopin, and speaking to the founder Johnny from Hopin there, and it's effectively we have to treat this as not a replacement for in person, right? It's not a like for like replacement. It's a different experience, right? People are going to get a different experience, and you can't recreate necessarily bumping into people in the hallways. You don't have, like you have in Dublin, that opportunity to have a chat with Patrick Campbell, on the expo hall floor, or Steady Effie or so on, right? And you just bump into these people across Dublin, and you're going out for dinners with these small groups of people, right? These are the things that you can't really do. However, I mean, certainly with the technology, and again, like with Hopin, I mean, one thing that they've done from a networking side of things. So effectively, if you look at what value is SaaStop Online and via kind of like Hopin kind of bringing, right? There's the opportunity to kind of learn from the content that we put on. So that still remains. And actually, maybe in some ways, it's enhanced because, you're sitting at home, there's no distractions, you're not the back of a huge kind of hall with a lot of noise, and, the speaker's really far away and you can't see it. You've got the speaker, looking at you in the eyes almost, right? You can't see you, but looking at you in the eyes. You might be able to, take a lot more kind of out of that. Then, we have the kind of the networking side of things. And what Hopin have done with their networking tool is effectively, they call it a bit like chat roulette, but for business. So to recreate that serendipity of, bumping into random sort of like people, effectively, you go into the networking area and, press connect, and it pairs you with somebody randomly. And you might then get paired with somebody that and you join with a smile on your face because you know that person. Or it might be somebody that you don't know, and then you've got 5 minutes to kind of like, speed network with them. And that's what they're sort of trying there. And then we've got the expo hall. And again, it's a very different experience, and we're still looking to kind of optimize that. But the things that we're looking at for EMEA online is obviously, we do a pub crawl in Dublin, and we're looking to recreate that online for SaaStop EMEA online. So you'll have to attend to figure out how we do that.
Yes, yeah.
And additionally, I think one of the great things about SaaStop in Dublin is that, you run the conference sort of during the day, but then there's still as much value, sometimes even more, during the evening, where it spills out to the dinners and then, the parties, which are hosted by our various partners. So we're going to be doing, some networking events, in the evening. Again, it will be online. But what we'll look to do is try to recreate some of that Dublin magic, but do that online, as well. And these are some of the things that we're looking at. So we know we can't recreate, in person, and it's going to be different. But what we're looking at doing is still connecting people, trying to bring, smiles on their faces, as we do it. And so people can have, they can learn, they connect, and they can have a great time you know, at the same time. So it's going to be different, but we've got to treat it that way.
You mentioned that you're moving from kind of a single global conference to breaking them up a little more regionally now. What kinds of things are you hoping will kind of be a benefit of those smaller, more regional conferences? Like, where will you be able to focus? I mean, time zone obviously is one, and I know you're breaking it up over multiple days in the same time zone, but what other kinds of things are you hoping to achieve with that move? Because I look at it and say, like, it's online, everybody should be able to access it all at the same time. You could have an 8-hour conference, but so I'm intrigued of what you think the potential benefit and the goal of these regional online conferences is.
Yeah. So there's a couple of benefits, right? Certainly, if we look at the benefit to that community, for instance, that regional community, one of the reasons that we had the global conference in Dublin, but we were doing the regional conferences in person as well. So we are continuing to do that, but doing that online now. And therefore, so if we have like SaaS.Doc Remote or SaaS.Doc EMEA online, you know, in October, which was a replacement for the Dublin one, yes, anybody from across the world, you know, can attend that. And in general, like, you know, the content for that, it's applicable to SaaS founders, right? So if you're a SaaS founder from Brazil or you're a SaaS founder from Singapore, you know, that content is relevant because of, you know, what you're learning is applicable to your business, right? But what we're able to do with the regional events is really kind of get more thought leadership, you know, opportunities to regional founders that perhaps wouldn't, you know, necessarily be on the global stage. And they give a more kind of local perspective. So for instance, with SaaS.Doc Latam, which is happening on the 1st of September, most of Brazil is a huge country, right? And actually will be the majority of makeup of the audience for SaaS.Doc Latam. And they've got quite a good SaaS scene there. I've been sort of going there for the last sort of few years and attending various events. And we run an event in their SaaS.Doc Latam in person there last year, and now it's online this year. They've got a number of companies that are doing, you know, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million ARR. And they're all focused within that market. They're not selling in the US. They're not selling in Europe. They don't need to be because Brazil is a huge country. And so they do things kind of differently. And therefore, some of the stories that they can tell, and certainly maybe all the stories they can tell about scaling their business are applicable to that market and how they've cracked that market and what they're doing in that market. And often on a global event, you know, you'll get, and we have, you know, like the CEO of Zoom Info, you know, or the CEO of Clary or whatever. And, you know, you get these US entrepreneurs and perhaps sometimes it's a bit more US-centric kind of viewpoint that they have. But actually, by doing it regionally, we can have a LATAM-centric viewpoint. We can have an Asia-Pac-centric viewpoint. So from a content, we're delivering content that matters for SaaS businesses that in some ways can still be applicable to all SaaS companies, but is much more focused, you know, on that region. And there therefore is more benefit to those founders from that region from that respect. And then additionally, like to us, there is a benefit to us in that we have a network of partners that really kind of fund SaaS.Doc through, you know, sponsorship, right? So we get paid through sponsorship or people buying tickets. Moving online, you know, the ticket price, I mean, ticket price and sponsorship prices have dropped because our costs have dropped. So we put that back to, you know, our community, and so we certainly haven't raised the prices, and the prices are very low to attend those events. But our partners, some of our partners are active, you know, in various different regions, and they may want to, if we're doing an event in Asia Pacific, they may be interested in that and our EMEA event, and therefore we can have a group of partners that we know that are interested in the Asia Pacific region, and therefore we'll get sponsorship for that, and therefore we're getting revenue for that. And therefore, we can create an event that serves that community and plus, you know, generates revenue for us.
Yeah.
So people are interested in these specific, you know, markets, segmented markets, sort of makes sense. So if we do a big global one, often again, I mean, one of the challenges we found with SaaS.Doc Remote, with that being a global event, our US partners, many of them were only selling in the US, right? And then European partners, you know, they're looking for certain demographics. And if you're doing, you know, one big global online event, it's like, well, how many people are coming from, you know, from Northern Europe? And you're like, well, I think, you know, this much. And it's kind of difficult then to promise that partner that you're going to get this many people from Northern Europe. But if you're doing Latin America only, we can say, well, 100% of people from Latin America, you know, almost anyway, we'll be in attendance. And so it's easier from a sponsorship selling perspective to, you know, say what sort of audience and target market's going to be there.
Gotcha. That's interesting. I'd like to kind of circle back to, you know, March, April, kind of when you were looking at kind of what was coming and made the decisions that you made as a team and kind of how that whole process went. And I know it's probably tough to generalize, but maybe kind of try to pull out some things that you all did well or kind of thought through, and maybe some things you didn't do well that other folks that are listening that like maybe aren't conference companies, but are founders and have to pivot and have to deal with the shit that we all get some days that you think you might be able to say, we did this good. We definitely screwed this up. Those kind of things.
Yeah. Thinking about that, the things that we did well, things that helped us through the pivot is one was that we acted fast. So we're using the sprint methodology, as a business. So in terms of when we are, setting our rocks or our OKRs, what we did sort of back then, and maybe the timing was right because in terms of the beginning of the quarter, we knew that we kind of like had to pivot. So we had our kind of, quarterly planning day, which we did online via Zoom and using Miro, and we were able to kind of collaborate. And we had the exec team on the first day and then the whole company on the second day. And on the first day, of that quarterly planning day, a large part of that was obviously, selecting what should our priorities be. And it was actually very clear that, the priority was that we needed, to choose this online conference. And so we had one single goal for that quarter, which was SaaS.remote. We had the single revenue goal from that. And then during that quarterly planning day, we worked out in terms of what were all the priorities, per department were needed and what were the tasks of those department. And so we worked in, breakout groups on Zoom to kind of, work on these and then put them up onto, we're using a platform called Align to kind of manage our tasks and priorities. So basically within 48 hours, once we sort of presented that, to the team the next day and got an input, we had our plan for the next 90 days. Our single focus, is SaaS.remote, and everybody in the business is working on that. And everybody has a role to play to kind of work on that. So that was one thing that worked really well. So we were sort of fast in planning, and then we were fast in execution because then we were working in the kind of sprint methodologies across various teams. And so each team would then do their, there's sprint retros and say, this worked, this didn't work. And we were able to change tack. So for instance, again, having that adaptability, something that we saw initially was that our positioning was, I think, wrong for SaaS.remote. And, we'd chosen the kind of positioning. We'd taken the in-person conference and we put it online. And then we had the tagline and said, the SaaS.remote you know and love online, right? And then after a few weeks, and I was sort of looking at this, and I was like, well, first of all, this strapline really, like, what does it say to anybody that doesn't know what SaaS.remote is? If you don't know and love SaaS.remote, then, like, you don't know what the hell it is, right? So it's not great positioning. And then it's talking about us, but it's not talking about what value that we're offering to people. So we adapted. I took some learnings from some other events that I was attending. And then we changed the strapline and positioning to, after discussions internally, to adapt, survive, and thrive. And from that resonated much more to what was happening, globally, and what was happening to our community. And people responded much better to that. So that was our ability to kind of, see that what we'd done initially, wasn't really working. And then have some discussions internally and kind of change that. So that was good in terms of, we also, I think, changed and iterated our pricing, as well, getting feedback and seeing kind of what worked and what didn't work. We having, your backs against the wall and, going through a crisis, for the first time, for us and for everybody in the team, never perhaps been through a pivot, had never been through a global pandemic, right? Had never been through, the company, in trouble. It's amazing what that can do for motivation, right? And I probably, we were very transparent. So again, transparency in these situations, I think, is super important. And the team sort of, you know, really appreciated that. And I saw perhaps the best motivation I'd ever seen, you know, from the team during that period to kind of, you know, help us achieve that goal when everybody was driven. And it did take, you know, a couple of weeks after we launched, you know, we were having conversations, but we hadn't, you know, generated any revenue. And so people's motivation was starting to dip and like, you know, hey, we're having conversations, but nobody's buying. Mm. But then, you know, I had to do a lot of reassurance, you know, with the team, it'll come, you know, trust the process and a lot of like, you know, I think motivational management there. But we did have a process in place, told people to kind of trust it, and it did come, you know, which was also great. But yeah, I mean, having that motivation, having everybody, you know, owning a responsibility, which all worked up towards that one single goal, I think was like super key for us. And there wasn't sort of these distractions. Now, as we go into this quarter, you know, we do have like a couple of, not everybody is focused on the same goal. So we have a couple of people that have some different goals. And actually, then we are sort of seeing perhaps slightly, you know, different, different responses, you know, and different, I think, sort of results really in terms of, you know, what we saw in last quarter and different levels of motivation across the business. So there's still, you know, challenges to kind of iron out, but I could definitely, you know, advocate for, you know, having the main thing, you know, being the main thing and everybody working on the main thing and not having, you know, different kind of like side projects and so on and too many things going on, right? So having one goal per quarter, having fewer priorities as possible, you know, per quarter, and then everybody working on those, you know, that definitely was beneficial to us.
Mm. Mm, that's cool. I would imagine for a lot of us, there's just some kind of letdown at this point too, right? It's like we all worked so hard to get through that, you know, March, April, May timeframe. Now it's over. We're faced with kind of whatever we're faced with right now in terms of business and coronavirus. And yeah, I think a lot of us are just kind of tired right now.
Yeah,
exactly. So I can imagine that's what you're seeing a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, everybody gave everything, to SaaS.up remote. And then a lot of conversations about burnout after that and, you know, not having the same energy, like, you know, for the rest of it, we've got another free event or we've just given everything for the last 90 days in that event and I've got to do it all over again times three, you know, it's a big ask. So we're seeing that issue and it's something that we're, you know, kind of trying to manage and that has impacted, you know, results initially as we've been slow off the mark, you know, this quarter, starting to kind of pick that up again now.
Cool. Alex, really interesting story. I think I've learned a lot that's applicable to everybody, whether you're in the event space or you're not. I think as a, you know, a founder story and kind of story of perseverance and adaptation and pivoting, it's super interesting. Thanks for being so candid and sharing everything about what you guys kind of have been through and where you are. SaaStalk.com for folks that want to check out more about the events and kind of whatever form they're taking. And is there a place for folks to follow you online personally?
Yeah, I try to be active as much as I can on Twitter at Alex Thuma or find me on LinkedIn. I would say they're probably my two most active platforms, unless you want to see photos of what I eat on Instagram. probably not.
Cool. Alex, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much, Craig.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.